This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures yesterday on the Board of Trade were higher in corn by 1 to 4 cents, soybeans higher by 13 to 16 cents, and wheat in Chicago was lower by 2 to 3 cents. More in-depth on your grain markets yesterday, Tuesday. Soybeans were once again the leader of the market, with sizable advances being posted in the complex on Tuesday. Demand was one reason for it, with both exports and domestic usage continuing to run at elevated levels. This shows the market that rationing has yet to affect buyer interest, and more needs to be done. Data that shows funds have plenty of buying room left in their positions added to Tuesday's soybean strength, as did concerns over long-range weather outlooks in South America. Less interest was shown in grains on Tuesday, even though we did finally see a flash sale on corn, as Mexico bought 195,000 metric tons of corn on Tuesday. The most interest in global balance sheets right now is in U.S. beans, even though just tightened, the current U.S. carryout figure on soybeans could easily contract even more. U.S. soybean sales for export are already 80% of the marketing year expectation. That leaves less than 400 million bushels of sales over the next 10 months to reach the yearly projected 2.2 billion bushel mark. Even if sales slow, this number is likely to be surpassed. It's not hard to justify a true ending stocks figure of less than 100 million bushels in that scenario. Not only has demand for U.S. soybeans been high in recent months, but so has demand for soybean oil. Other oilseed products around the world are in short supply, mainly palm oil. The U.S. is also seeing less competition from canola oil, as Canada is shipping more whole canola than product. The greatest benefit to soybean oil is concerns over the Argentina soybean crop as loss predictions build in that country. The bottom line in Tuesday's market environment was that it favored sellers over buyers. That started with the U.S. farmer and how they are in no need of making additional commodity sales to generate cash flow. Large sales took place right at harvest, and this generated enough cash flow for many to last until later in the year. In addition to these sales, many have received enough government payments to further restrict their cash selling. South American weather forecast is indicating dry conditions that will likely persist into the end of November. Current models indicate 62% of Brazil will remain dry over the next 2 weeks. The same outlook expects 76% of Argentina to be dry into the month's end. A good portion of those two countries are expected to see less than half of their normal rainfall over that period, intensifying drought conditions there. Most of the attention on South America production loss has been on soybeans and corn, but more is starting to develop on wheat. Argentine wheat production has been hit hard with drought this year, and analysts now believe the crop will only total 16.7 million metric ton. If that's correct, that would be the smallest Argentine wheat crop in 5 years. The loss is being overshadowed, however, by a record large Australian wheat crop that is supplying a large share of the global demand. Trade is also expecting a large wheat crop out of the United States next year as well, and European Union officials believe their wheat plantings will increase by 9%, which may keep the global supply steady. More estimates are being released for what next year's plantings here in the U.S. might total. Estimates indicate U.S. farmers will plant 92 million acres of corn next year, 1 million more than this past year. Soybean acres are predicted to reach 89 million acres, 6 million acres of an increase. Wheat plantings are expected to total 46 million acres, a 1.7 million acre increase. The question is, even with all these elevated plantings, if production will end up satisfying demand this time next year. So to recap your higher grain futures from yesterday, Tuesday's close on the Board of Trade Chicago. Corn December was up by 4 at 420 and a quarter. March corn up 2.5, 426 and 3/4. May corn on Tuesday up by 1.5 at 429 and 3/4. January soybeans up by 16 and a quarter at 1169 and 3/4. March beans up 14 at 1168 and a half. May beans up 11 and 3/4 at 1164 and 3/4. Chicago wheat for December was down by 2 and 3/4 on Tuesday, 595 and a quarter. March wheat down 1 and 3/4 at 603. May wheat down 1 and 3/4 as well, 606 and 3/4. Bean meal for December had a large gain of 650 to 395.80 a ton. January bean meal up 540 $3.94.70 per ton. Soybean oil, December, up 7 cents, $37.50. January bean oil, up 3 cents, $37.31. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Tuesday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Tuesday's reported grain price and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois grain prices were higher on Tuesday afternoon as demand for fall soybeans start the discussions of price rationing. In northern West Illinois, grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 4 to 9 cents at 386 to 410. Soybean bids were 16 cents higher at 1120 to 1142. In central Illinois, grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 4 cents at $4 to 418. Soybean bids were 16 to 19 cents higher at 1134 to 1176. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were mostly 4 to 7 cents higher at 380 to 435. Soybean bids are up 16 to 22 cents at 1118 to 1173. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 16 to 23 cents higher at 1162 to 1185. Basis was steadied up 7 at 800 to 15 over the January. High pro soybean meal on a truck base offered at $397.80 to $405.80, up $6.50 a ton with basis unchanged at 2 over to 10 over the December. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were 4 cents higher at 410 to 442, with basis steady at 10 under to 22 over the December. Illinois River barge loading elevators coated and produced corn bids up 6 to 12 cents, 412 to 415. Basis is up 2 to 8 at 8 under to 5 under the December. Soybeans ended 16 to 21 cents higher at 1150 to 1160, with basis steadied up 5 at 20 under to 10 under the January. East St. Louis barge loading tomato placer produced corn bids up 9 to 17 cents, 431 to 432. These elevators raised their soybean prices 16 to 28 cents. Quotations at 1169 to 1170. Soft wheat closed down 3 cents at 604 to 605. Milo ended the day up 4 to 6 cents at 480 to 490. Contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 395 to 422. Soybeans at 1120 to 1153. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at 408 to 429, soybeans at 1147 to 1176. In the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 406 to 448, soybeans at 1148 to 1195. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on now to your livestock futures report here on a Wednesday morning from the Tuesday close. Live cattle, feeder cattle, and hogs were all higher across the board on Tuesday. Not much news out of the cattle complex on Tuesday, but we do have a bit of news from the hog report. As China is continuing to rebuild its hog herd following the outbreak of African swine fever there, data has shown that during the month of October, China increased its hog inventory of 27% from October of 2019. China's sow herd showed an increase of 31.5%, which indicates we'll see numbers start to rise even faster come future months. A result of this build in inventory is declining pork value in China. This decrease is lowering the level at which Chinese importers are willing to make purchases, and that pressures the global hog market. So despite higher numbers yesterday in the hog market, they may continue to tumble with the increase of hogs in China. Again, no report on the cattle complex other than that numbers were higher on Tuesday, so we'll recap your livestock futures from yesterday. Your live cattle for December were up 90 cents at 111.32. February live cattle up $1.55, 113.57. April live cattle up 90, 117.25. Feeder cattle November up a dime, 137.37. January feeders on Tuesday up $1.80, 139.72. March feeders up $1.50 at 139.17. Finally, your hog futures for December were up 37 cents, 65.52. February hogs up $1.85, 65.62. April lean hogs up $1.77 at 69.22. And tomorrow morning, we hope to have a more in-depth report when it comes to the cattle markets. Again, the hog markets are likely to start dropping after an increase of the sow herd and the overall hog herd in China. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture on this Wednesday morning for Tuesday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Tuesday afternoon livestock report. Starting the national daily direct hog report calculations, your 200-pound pork carcass traded 24 cents lower. In a range of $52 to $60 with a weighted average carcass price of $58.66. From the Illinois direct sow port, slaughter sow price were $2 to $3 higher, with good demand for moderate to heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded $32 to $36, 4 to 5 weighted $35 to $39, 5 to 6 weighted $35 to $42, and over 600 pounds $41 to $45. On the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts, country buying points were weak, with good demand for moderate to heavy offerings, ranging from $39 to $42. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts, a total $29,049. In the direct cattle trade, the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers live basis trade at 107 to 110. Choice heifers live basis trade at 110. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts with stallions, 437 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was $78.60, which is $2.55 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading higher. Choice carcass was $233.77, which was $6.77 higher, while select carcass were $213.96, which is $1.61 higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 121,000. Compared to 120,000 last week, 120,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated 493,000 compared to 493,000 last week and 498,000 one year ago. That includes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by Pros Drainage, by Farm Credit Illinois, and by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield. Part two of the Morning Ag Show brought to you by the CNB Bank and Trust with 17 locations to serve you. By the Montgomery County Farm Bureau, where membership means value. By Stein Seed. And by CHS, creating connections to empower agriculture. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now in Ag News here on your Wednesday morning. The American Farm Bureau's trade advisor says that U.S. agriculture already benefits from deals with most of the Asian nations that just signed onto the world's largest trade deal called the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. The 15-country RCEP includes China, but not the United States. And the 11-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership that the U.S. pulled out of in 2018 would lower tariffs in a sprawling new trade region, boosting trade among members by some $428 billion. But American Farm Bureau trade advisor Dave Salmonson is not convinced that the deal will harm U.S. agriculture.
The U.S. has trade agreements with several of the members of the new RCEP. You look at the, Japan, China, South Korea, Australia. Main members, I would say, of the RCEP, the U.S. has trade agreements with them.
But as for the tariff disadvantages inside those two trade deals, Salmonson had this to say.
All the countries I mentioned, including South Korea, we already have preferential tariff relationships with. See, the RCEP has not yet published their tariff schedules. In fact, other than the announcement of the agreement, not much has come out in specifics. So I guess that'll have to wait until we can really compare and see if we really are at a disadvantage anywhere.
And RCEP isn't expected to be ratified for possibly two more years. In the meantime, Salmonson says the Biden administration will have to confront decisions on TPP, RCEP, and more, despite the president-elect saying he'll prioritize other concerns like domestic issues over entering foreign trade deals.
Most predominantly is how to engage with China, continue the current policies, go in a different direction. For U.S. agriculture, we certainly want the Phase 1 agreement to continue, build on that. And, of course, we have a trade with Japan.
Salmonson adds that the business of trade goes on every day, and at some point the new administration will have to deal with all of this. And in news off Capitol Hill, progressives in agriculture appear to be making a push to keep former North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp out of the USDA Secretary's office in a Biden administration. Newsbreak.com says the conflict is ramping up as Representative Marsha Fudge of Ohio has begun to campaign for the job. USDA is a $150 billion department that oversees ag policy, supports the farm economy, and feeds millions of low-income households. Heidekamp has been seen as a top contender for the spot because of her moderate politics and friendly relationship with the agricultural sector. However, a coalition is working behind the scenes to eliminate her candidacy before it even gets going. They argue that she's too conservative and far too cozy with the fossil fuel industry and corporate agribusiness. Quote, there will be a big fight on Heidekamp if Biden puts her name forward, according to Carrie Hammerschlag, deputy director of the Food and Agriculture Program at Friends of the Earth. Most of the nonprofits against Heidekamp are far out on the left flank of even the most progressive food and agricultural circles. However, divisions about Heidekamp appear to run deep. The National Farmers Union, not a member of this coalition, is facing its own questions about whether to get behind the former North Dakota senator. Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts of Kansas and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow of Michigan are saying the Senate has unanimously passed the bipartisan U.S. Grain Standards Reauthorization Act of 2020. The act regulates marketing standards for grains and oilseeds and extends the inspection authority through September 2025. Quote, the Senate has approved the Grain Standards Reauthorization Act, which will allow America to continue fostering a healthy domestic grain market and positive relationship with our trading partners, according to Roberts. Stabenow says as farmers face unprecedented uncertainty and trade instability, it's vital to maintain the integrity of the grain inspection system. Quote, the bipartisan bill protects the interest of American farmers and ensures our credibility as a reliable producer of high-quality crops, she said. The bill would include customers and applicants for inspection or weighing services in the list of people that must be notified in writing when a state agency intends to temporarily discontinue official inspection or weighing service. The bill still needs approval in the House and will also require that the USDA conduct a thorough review of the agency's official geographic areas. In other USDA news, now on dairy, the USDA is reminding dairy producers that the deadline to enroll in the Dairy Margin Coverage Program for calendar year 2021 is quickly approaching, coming up on December 11th. The USDA's Farm Service Agency opened DMC sign-up back in October to help producers manage economic risk brought on by milk price and feed cost disparities. In a quote from FSA Administrator Richard Fordyce, 2020 has been a very challenging year for ag producers, and we don't yet know what next year will bring. Dairy producers should definitely consider coverage for 2021, as even the slightest drop in the margin can trigger a payment. The DMC program, first created back in 2018 by the Farm Bill, offers reasonably priced protection to dairy producers when the difference between the all milk price and the average feed cost, which is the margin, falls below a specific dollar amount selected by the producer. To enroll, producers must certify with FSA that the operation is commercially marketing milk, sign all the required forms, and pay the $100 administrative fee unless the farm qualifies for a waiver. Producers can select the $4 catastrophic level of coverage with no premium fee. They can also choose to buy up coverage where the premium is based on margin triggers between $4.50 and $9.50 on 5 to 95% of their established production history. And another ag news on the dairy front, although it's not been officially confirmed yet that Joe Biden is the new president, U.S. Dairy is already working behind the scenes to make sure the industry remains top of mind for new officials in D.C. For example, the National Milk Producers Federation has already congratulated Joe Biden and reminded him that bipartisan solutions are the best solutions. The NMPF points out that a widely accepted policy is less likely to be tossed out the moment a different political party takes power. Michael Torrey, a longtime expert of farm legislation, says advocating at the federal level for dairy farmers will be crucial with new lawmakers set to join Congress and possibly a new president headed to the White House. Quote, there are going to be a lot of new faces, there's going to be a new philosophy, and going to be new leadership, Torrey said to members of the Edge Dairy Farmers Cooperative. DairyReport.com says the challenge of helping lawmakers understand the complexity of issues in the dairy industry is growing. He points out the defeat of Colin Peterson as a potential challenge because the longtime Minnesota congressman understands dairy policy more than most do on either side of the political divide. In other news out of USDA now for your Wednesday, the National Industrial Hemp Council has announced it received $200,000 in funding from the USDA's Market Access Program. Those funds will support export market development for industrial hemp. Quote, "We are grateful for the USDA's confidence and the recognition of NIHC as a industry leader in industrial hemp for trade and marketing," according to Kevin Lattner, Senior Vice President for Trade and Marketing. Quote, "Today's announcement makes NIHC a trusted partner to USDA for hemp fiber, feed, food, and CBD companies looking to break down trade barriers in markets overseas." Lattner is the one responsible for implementing the market development program. NIHC program will focus on Europe and China and include market research, trade policy, and trade facilitation. The global industrial hemp and products market was worth $11.1 billion in retail sale back in 2019, with an additional growth rate of 52%, driven by continued strength in textile, food, and industrial uses, and hemp-derived CBD. The global market is forecasted to be worth $89 billion by 2025. And in our featured ag story today for a Wednesday, the November World Ag Supply and Demand Report released last week by the Department of Agriculture continued to project record soybean exports for the current marketing year. Mac Marshall, United Soybean Board and U.S. Soybean Export Council Vice President of Market Intelligence, says USDA also lowered its yield estimate by 1.2 bushel an acre to 50.7, reducing the expected crop size roughly 100 million bushel to 4.17 billion bushel.
Still a very large crop, still a lot of volume that we're having on the books that's destined for export channels. But when you square it against total usage here, we're now having a very, very tight carryout expected for this year. With that reduction, now our expected ending stocks are down to under 200 million bushels, 190 million bushels to be exact. And that's the lowest carryout we've had since the 2013-2014 marketing year.
USDA predicts the expected marketing year price at $10.40 a bushel, up from $9.80 last month and the highest since July of 2014. Marshall says exports are still pegged at a record 2.2 billion bushel.
There wasn't a revision to that this month, but it's supported by the really robust export pace we've had since the start of the marketing year on September 1st. We're approaching 17 million metric tons exported already. We've got over 47 million metric tons of total commitments, and those are both record figures for this time of the year. It's all speaking to an overall bullish environment where there's a lot of really strong, robust demand happening internationally.
He also says the United Soybean Board and the U.S. Soybean Export Council are committed to finding new markets and uses for U.S. soy.
Us at USB and USEC, we're obviously continuing to work to ensure that there's developing growth and opportunities for the marketing and application of U.S. soy, be it through new domestic uses or high-volume exports overseas. We're committed to showcasing the advantage of U.S. soy from a compositional standpoint to new and existing international buyers, and also looking for new industrial uses that we have domestically.
And you can stay up to date with the latest information from the United Soybean Board by visiting the Market Intelligence page under Farmer Resources at unitedsoybean.org. Moving along now into State of Illinois Ag News, we'll go over your crop progress and condition report from Sunday. There were 5 days suitable for field work this past week, with temperatures more than 6 degrees above normal and rainfall a little more than usual. Corn and soybean harvest is now done, so crop statistician Mark Sloysner looks at the winter wheat crop along with statewide pasture conditions.
92% of the Illinois winter wheat crop has emerged compared to 82% last year and 85% for the 5-year average. The condition of the Illinois wheat crop declined slightly to 10% very poor to poor, 24% fair, and 66% good to excellent. Pasture conditions were rated 34% very poor to poor, 23% fair, and 43% good to excellent.
Average statewide topsoil moisture on Sunday was rated at 10% very short, 21% short, 66% adequate, and 3% surplus following the rain we had over the weekend. In other state news from USDA NAS, in late November, the USDA's National Ag Statistics Service will begin surveying farmers here in Illinois and across the country to estimate hog and pig inventory. The survey will determine inventory as of December 1st, the size of the pig crop over the last 3 months, and future farrowing intentions. Quote, NAS will mail questionnaires to farmers near the end of November. Farmers may return the survey by mail or online, according to Mark Sloysener, Illinois State Statistician. The USDA encourages farmers to respond online at agcounts.usda.gov, as it is secure, efficient, and saves cost. Quote, this quarterly survey provides valuable information about hog production to farmers in rural communities, added Sloysener. Farmers may be contacted by phone during December if they've not returned their survey by mail or online. Quote, the survey shows that hog inventory in Illinois have been rising since 23rd, Sloysener went on to explain. NAS safeguards the privacy of all respondents and publishes only aggregate data, ensuring that no individual operation or producer can be identified, as it's required by federal law. Results will be published in the Hog and Pig Report that will be released on December 23rd and will be available online at nas.usda.gov/publications. If you'd like more information, you can call the NAS Heartland Regional Field Office in Springfield at 800-551-1014. And in one last bit of ag news from the state level, the Illinois Department of Agriculture is announcing their second year of the Fall Covers for Spring Savings Program. This program is applicable for acreage here in Illinois that was planted to a cover crop this fall and then will be planted to an insurable crop to come next spring. Eligible applicants will receive a $5 per acre premium discount on the following year's crop insurance invoice for every acre of cover crops that have been enrolled and verified within the program. The inaugural season back last year of the program, initiated by State Senators Scott Bennett and Andy Menar, resulted in an additional 50,000 acres of cover crops being planted here in Illinois, with 70% of applicants identified as planting a cover crop for the very first time. Farmers are encouraged to take this program into consideration when making their fall planting decisions. Applications will be made available coming up here in December on the Illinois Department of Agriculture's website, and further information can be obtained by contacting the Illinois Department of Agriculture at 217-782-6297. And that concludes your Ag News here for a Wednesday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Wednesday morning, November 18th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.